Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Discretion advised.
The Farmington district of Los Angeles has been one of the most dangerous areas of the city. We can make the Farmington district a safer home for all of us.
What the hell? Looks like you got some kind of third nag going down there.
This March.
Doesn't bother you the things he does?
Nick Mackey is giving people what they want. What people want is to make it to their cars without getting mugged.
FX takes you.
Some cop roughs up some guy. It's don't ask, don't tell.
To the dark side of the badge.
Your turn to play bad cop?
No. Good cop and bad cop left for the day. I'm a different kind of cop.
What is a good cop?
Remember, team comes first. Take care of each other, all right?
What is a bad cop?
Mac is not a cop. He's out on the phone with a badge.
What is justice?
The police!
TV will never forget. The Shield, an original FX series coming this March.
And buemo. To get closing thoughts on this show, I thought I'd invite the most spectacular podcast host, Cinema Psyops, Court. How are you, sir?
I don't know if I'm the most spectacular.
I knew you were going to retaliate against the description.
I mean, if you're saying that in your opinion, then I'm not going to argue with how you feel about it. But I just feel like you are overselling me to the rest of the world, is all I'm saying.
Well, it's perfect because this show consists of overselling.
If you're going to do it, you might as well do it all up, right?
I'm naughty, naughty. Oh, so basically getting the final closing thoughts on this show that is known as The Shield. It wasn't the first show to break a lot of rules, but it also was kind of one of the more rare shows of the 2000s that basically covered so much social commentary, so much off-color dark humor, trying to one up all the other procedural shows using a docudrama look and handheld camera work. What was your intro to it, just to get your final closing thoughts on the show?
I remember seeing ads for The Shield on like right around like 7 or 8-ish, where they're like, you know, you got to stay up late if you want to watch The Shield, because this shit is real. You
know, this shit is real. Yeah.
Like the kind of commercial thing that they used to do back with FX, or, you know, whatever.
They don't do now. Now it's a different guy doing the voice all the together for the narration for all the closers and promos.
Yeah, this was like, there was a time when, like, back before even Spike TV existed, where like FX was like really trying to be like not your grandma's network, you know,
kind of thing.
They were selling this kind of stuff on. And they really kind of over time just kind of soothe themselves down into being like a just really solid network that focuses on story. But this stuff with the season and around this era, I remember seeing it because it started like in the 90s, didn't it? Like mid to late 90s?
No, it was 2002 to 08. But
I know
what you mean, though. We're still coming off of the 90s, used to all the other kind of edgy promos, you know, tonight on TNT.
Right. Okay.
Stay up late for TBS.
What it really kind of feels to me, and as far as censorship sides of things go, and as far as pushing the envelope, which this show absolutely totally did in its time frame. It may not have been the first to really start to push the envelope, but I feel like when we had some of the network television shows, when they're showing like ass in the silhouette shots on like NYPD Blue, or, you know, saying shit at suspects and swearing like at certain times of night, and just seeing what the FCC would, you know, push, you know, just to the side and ignore if people complained about, and how far they could kind of take these standards and practices. I feel like the other shows that were doing that on the broadcast TV in the like the 90s and the late 90s and stuff like that, it evolved into the folks that are doing these network, like cable network shows where, well, wait a minute, the FCC rules say that since you pay for this, this is part of a subscription, we can actually do even more than what we have been doing. We can push the envelope even further. And they started doing a thing where they're like, well, the restrictions lax even later at night, because the kind of people that, you know, like I think it was on the Outer Limits, one of the Outer Limits episodes, this woman's talking to an alien and said that all good people are asleep and dreaming at the time of night that this alien is visiting. So like, I always thought that the way that the FCC looked at it was the later that something played, basically there was a magical time and night that they had set where it was like, all good people are now asleep and dreaming, and you fucking deviants can have the airwaves. And, yes. And so like, it's like that for broadcast TV. And I think I can't remember what the market is, but this is a time frame like right before like infomercials got super crazy, because it's like right after this series and stuff like that. But around this time, like super late night TV was always more subversive and crazy, and they got away with so much crazy shit because the FCC was like, okay, all good people are asleep and dreaming, let's let these deviants have these shows. And I feel like that's where the cable networks realized that they could do that even earlier. They could do some of the same stuff, and they could start snagging the kind of content that you have to play later at night on like a CBS, you can play on an FX at like 7 or 8. So if they give you, the same kind of like really just out there gritty shit that they can't do on broadcast TV at the same prime time, what we now have is prime time for grownups. And they ran with that prime time for extreme, you know, our prime time to the extreme kind of thing in the 2000s. But what they ended up doing is sneakily pushing boundaries of what types of stories could be told, and ended up opening up the world to this really dark, very grim view of just how fucked the LAPD really is.
Absolutely. And I mean, you already have all these other barriers, pretty much every other crime show, Profiler, CSI, you know, they're doing a lot of stuff that, you know, no one else was doing. And then, you know, following up with Homicide, NYPD, those are kind of the kickers, but they're not, you know, they're kind of igniting the fire. And then you got political issues on the West Wing that otherwise no one else would have allowed you to talk about, you know, unless it was like, again, like an episode of The Outer Limits or Star Trek, where you can cover it up with sci-fi layering. I think it helps that this guy, Sean Ryan, you know, creates it. He's already done Nash Bridges, which is kind of a lowbrow, silly, fun show. But he already kind of knows character development, and he's deciding, okay, how about I do a cop show? But I'm going to, again, like you say, I'm going to make it morbid. I'm going to make it inspired by Rampart. Michael Chiklis even describes his character as a mix between Tony Soprano and Hannibal Lecter. I think that's putting it nicely. I feel like Vic is a whole different kind of fucked up human being, because
he is Scarface with a fucking badge. He is that fucking ruthless and vile of a human being, but he has a badge, so it makes him feel like he's a man and a hero for doing it.
Exactly. And it's kind of a shame that we never really know too much about his upbringing or anything. And at the same time, we don't really need it, because it just reads on his face that he's just never had any tolerance for any restrictions or law. Is like, in many ways, him getting his badge is just an excuse to basically go around and just blackmail everybody. And, you know, to him, it's just fun and games. He gets off on it, for all we know. And
I'm not sure so much that he gets off on it. I think he is, it's sort of like a classic, the abused becomes an abuser, and you repeat the behavior that is familiar to you because that's kind of like the environment that he was raised in. I feel like that's just how he was treated. Like, I feel like his parents made him the monster that he is. Granted, he probably has some nature in there that makes him that ruthless and vile as well. But a lot of the things that he does, I feel, are very much learned behavior. And it, what he does is he compartmentalizes it and he puts it into his job, because in a lot of cases, he's dealing with inner city folks that aren't even the same race as him. And I'm going to just flat out say that these guys were like a paramilitary neo-Nazi unit of sorts, the way that they acted. I mean, they constantly victimize minorities and rob them and rip them off and hardly ever go anywhere near any white gangster that I can recall in all of the seven
Armenian
seasons.
Armenian doesn't count. Yeah, no. they pretty much go on the worst, the ghetto-ish areas they can think of. And that's interesting.
The already disenfranchised folks that can't get a leg up without having to break the law because of how, like, just diminished they have become in society and how horribly they've been treated and how poor everything around them is, that they don't even have a support system.
Exactly.
And they turn to crime, and then these guys come in and take the shit that they stole back.
They take the stolen goods, and they're the kind of people who are going to find something illegal that you're doing in your backyard, but they willingly went out of their way to look over the fence to see if you had something illegal before they break down your fence. It's just good God.
Yeah, the law only applies to the people in their crosshairs. That's really how they work as a whole entire unit. And I don't want to say that all of the cops in the show The Shield are like this. It's just specifically Mackie's unit and the way that they operate. The other cops, I mean, that are there, all of the other detectives are just trying to slug it out and do like an honest day's work. And yes, some of them make very bad choices and do some horrible things. But for the most part, they are at least attempting to do what's right.
Oh, exactly. For
the
most part,
with the other ones. Yeah.
Because you can't compare Dutch to Vic, because Dutch, he might be arrogant and also darkly humored, but you know, him almost semi becoming a serial killer by choking a stray cat is not the same as someone, you know, willingly who knows how to manipulate and blackmail and, you know, murder people and get away with it. You know, he's just so much like Claudette, becomes scarred by trying to figure out why people do the most messed up things they do. And, you know, he thinks Vic is scum of the earth, but he never at one point even connects that he's anywhere near as demented as any of the other killers he has to do intense interrogation room sit down with.
I gotta say, this TV show, I didn't really start watching until DVD years and years later after it was completely done. But I remember the commercials, and I remember my impression of the things, and I remember stuff about it on either The Soup or some other type of show like that that would talk about.
Oh, they made fun of it on there? That's great. I wish I could.
I feel like they did, but this is ages and back when Greg Kinnear hosted it would be about that time.
Oh, shit. Period,
right? Okay. Right? Because it's 2000-ish. Isn't that when Greg Kinnear hosted it? Or is that when...
I think he gave it up, and then that's when Aisha Tyler was hosting
it. Aisha Tyler was the 2000. Okay, I'm
doing the
it's
sports.
Been so fucking long ago. I don't remember my pop culture as well as I used to, but...
But that's close. I think he began around 04, and that's when he was just making fun of, you know, celebrities wearing no bra and guys saying stupid things without realizing how stupid it was, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. Now, I remember seeing exposure for stuff like that, or just, you know, that it'd be on Entertainment Tonight News, and I would catch a clip of something with the show. But I never really in that time frame, I didn't really have cable, so I didn't really watch it. But then it came out on DVD, and I think it was we started watching the first season right around the time that they were wrapping up the last season. So I was just starting to really watch it then, right around that time frame. And when the show gets to some of the darker and more just really out there twists, it does... So in such a way where it feels like this is a very real thing that is happening. It doesn't feel contrived like a lot of these other cop shows will do with their drama. As much as I love everything Dick Wolf has ever put out, Law and Order always felt like actors just delivering lines. It never felt like, holy shit, that could actually be really happening. And
I hence why him and David Simon on Homicide didn't always get along. Two different minds blending his franchise and Homicide together. So there you go. But right. That's so true. It doesn't feel like this is a closed off stage set. This feels kind of more, I like to say, kind of a crime version of Romero, where everybody's just kind of very isolated. Everybody's you have enough cinematographers who, again, been working on way more sillier shows, like, you know, Baywatch type stuff. And here they are just working on a show which is very psychological, very voyeuristic in terms of camera work. And there's plenty of other times where they do very different shots where someone is just peeking into the interrogation room, is like, who's looking in on the interrogation room? You know, is this the detective's point of view? It can't be, because they're on the other side of the camera. So it's just us, the viewers, looking at all this unpleasantness, is getting all these details.
I think that's a really good way to actually describe it. The voyeuristic aspect of the actual shots, the way that they're composed. I really agree with you there. It makes it feel like you are seeing things in a police station that you, as a viewer, should not be seeing. Who's the one that's peeking in there? It's us. We're spying on these people when we know exactly. We shouldn't be. And that's what makes it feel so much more intense than it actually is. And then when we get to the wider shots, or we get to the parts where there's violent interaction, they always film it such a kinetic and open way where it fills the entirety of the screen. And it ends up filling your vision so much more with just all this crazy action that's happening whenever they're in the violence, or breaking a bong and forcing someone to like give head to it, or whatever the shit that they're doing. Whenever they're filming that, it gets that very cinema verite, just really like almost shaky handheld, very, very kinetic shots of everything that's happening. And what you don't realize is they're basically visually beating you up. So that when they lock the camera down again and they're back in the station and things are okay,
right,
you almost feel like, holy shit, like you just came out of a trauma and now you have this relaxing, calm moment. But all you can think about is that shit that you just saw where he forced the guy to give head to his bong, you know, and then like the repercussions of what happens to Aceveda later because of that, which has to be. For the time frame that this was released in, that had to be some of the most transgressive stuff, the way that they shot it, or even the serial killers, where like there's a granny who died while she was being raped and like there's semen left behind on her body and they show it on the fucking screen, like as much nudity as they can get away with on this type of broadcast TV, and which is very clearly semen on her body, and it's being broadcast on cable television. Like, people had to lose their shit when that was done.
I had a friend who watched it briefly and he stopped watching in season one because even though they didn't show it, it just the depiction of the dialogue and them describing that one of the gangsters had pretty much thrown a pipe up another gangster's ass was just so vivid to him. He's like, this show's so fucked up, I can't watch it. And this is a guy who loves, you know, manly over the top movies.
Well, it's so real. That's the thing, is it's so real and so brutal with everything. And
but exploitation kind of,
right, because the actors are delivering it in a very serious, very matter of fact way, and they are holding, like, I feel like a lot of the facial expressions whenever they're describing this kind of stuff, where it's like they may not have seen this before, but like a few of them, you can tell this is really starting to get to them. But a lot of the other ones, they're holding it all in. And then when they finally explode later on, you've seen the entirety of their whole day. So it's no wonder Mackie's doing the crazy shit that he's doing, because they're all suffering from some form of PTSD and then dishing it out to other people. And then the show itself is almost making you feel those same kind of like flashback reactions from the kinetic stuff and all the violence that you see. And then when it gets the calm moments and all you can think about is all the violence that just happened before, it's because, well, they've been beating you up for 20 minutes and then there's the rest of the show.
That's so true. I noticed with Kavanaugh, and especially the good cops, or the ones we can at least root for, that there's definitely moments where it's like they're mentally venting or just kind of trying to avoid convulsing on the floor just from, you know, memory overload of how they're handling all this fucked up shit. But yeah, I never really thought of it, but yeah, Mackie and his team are definitely PTSD ridden, and I always just kind of mainly took their testosterone and their mind games and all the other stuff, but it's really much deeper than that. It definitely is them just acting like, you know, soldier boys. So now that makes me wonder if Vic's dad probably was just some kind of, you know, retired colonel who just, you know, couldn't show any kind of love except just, you know.
Oh, he beat him too. I guarantee you Vic got beaten as a kid and quite frequently.
Yeah, he might have been the guy who went to, dropped out of band camp, tried to join a military academy, and then realized, oh, you know, I'm not going to climb that fucking rope. You know, maybe probably talked back and had to be dishonorably discharged or some shit. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, he still could have been a colonel and beat the shit out of his kid every day and gotten away with it. I mean, it still happens.
It does still happen, unfortunately. There's a theory among fans, and especially from some brief dialogue, that Shane was definitely had an abusive dad. That's why he ends up using, you know, the N-word on, you know, in his fight with Tavon. That's also just a few other things, just a little few sprinklings. Because it seems like he's just kind of more, you know, obedient, but he's still, you know, going to say just, you know, any other just messed up shit that comes across his mind without thinking about it, because that's just all he knows.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if all of Mackie's team had really, really rough, horrible upbringings in some way, shape, or form.
Ronnie seems like he had a slightly normal existence, but he definitely was one who probably lived in fear. And for whatever reason, he lives in fear of Vic, but at the same time looks up to him like a bigger brother because he's the only guy who's shown him any love.
Yeah, that's very possible as well. I mean, this is just me going by memories of the last time that I watched it, you know, just kind of giving an overview of the impressions as they last years since you've last seen it, you know?
All good. I lucked out by watching it during college around 2010. So that was 2 years after it ended. And so I literally got it was the first show I got a headache watching because there's so much to take in and being like, oh, holy shit, I so want to binge this before it was really a thing on Netflix. And it's like, well, I got to just watch this in increments. But I ended up binging it. But it's definitely one of those, anyone who says they got it all in one take, they are totally lying. There's so many other layers and other elements and visual inserts that, you know.
If it wasn't such a rough rewatch, it is a very rewarding one in the layers of story. Yeah,
that's true. It is going to be rough. There's going to be some times where you're like, I really don't want to watch this one particular episode today. You know, I want to focus on all the other shit hitting the fan. But I think it benefits because instead of just being like every other procedural, it kind of just takes some of the look and then takes a few different types of looks to make it its own signature, if that makes sense. And then it, you know, half the time they're not even focusing on the mystery. They're just focusing on some messed up aftermath or the detective's commentary. And then just kind of circling around and somehow connecting it to something else that's going on. But they are definitely the most organized. They definitely didn't just storyboard this out. They definitely, Sean, Ryan, and his team definitely decided, let's, you know, organize all this chaos and then decide which part of the chaos we should focus on for that particular episode. So that way, you know, anyone can make sense of this from the get-go, even if they're just tuning into the middle of the episode.
Yeah, they do a great job with that. And I also feel just the way that it is put together, they started pushing the boundaries of what a television format should be. They started making television a lot more cinematic, I think, before a lot of other TV shows went that direction.
Absolutely.
A lot of them were playing at and doing certain things, but they were mostly locked off studio style shots. And if it was like, you know, like a Law and Order or even Homicide, if it's a handheld camera, it's a fucking Steadicam and everything just feels like, you know, you're just watching a drama or you are watching something that is pretend and, you know, make believe. But the way that this show was shot and the way that it was always constantly in your face and in the action and you just never knew, the way the camera angles were always just jumping around on you or the way that it would move, it became very cinematic and kinetic in the way that it was done. But then when they went to the locked off shots, they were also still moving the camera around a lot more, like you said, a dolly, like they'd be dollying around everywhere and just following people through the station and all of that kind of stuff. And it really feels like sort of, I don't want to say like a Quentin Tarantino influence, but like that walking that you would have through the restaurant with Scorsese is like they did that all the time through the police station. And you would get entire story dumps following various cops through the station along this track. Everybody just delivered all the stuff. Everybody was going off to do their things. That's so you would so have these, yeah. You'd have these touchstone moments where they did that like every fucking week. They would do a shot like that through one, maybe not every, I'm being a little hyperbolic, but like they would do that thing where they would go through with the story and you would walk through the station. You would follow every single character you were going to get in that episode. You would basically get a seated piece at the beginning of the episode or a walkthrough at some type at the beginning or near the earlier part of the episode. They would do that walkthrough. They would have a setup for the story. And then you would go off and follow the people out in the city throughout their life and what they're doing. And, you know, the various cops on their beats or, you know, the guys doing another hit or just hanging out in their clubhouse.
Yeah.
You know, but after that tour through the station, whenever they needed to reset or whenever they would do another segment, and then it became part where we needed to find out what's going on or if they were touching base or whatever, they'd come back and they'd do that semi walk through the station, you know, to like somebody's desk or something like that. But they always had it set to where you were walking into the building with somebody and you would walk through with somebody or the camera would be you as a voyeur just sneaking in. It's one of the ways that they did it, that it made it feel more realistic and cinematic than a lot of other TV around its time. And this basically is a good jumping off point because a lot of other TV shows started becoming more cinematic and doing more interesting shots around this time too. And I believe the golden age of TV that we ended up in, that ended up making the streaming boom that we're in now, can kind of get tied back to this time frame of how TV was being made and how it was trying to compete with theaters more and more. And, you know, just so making shots and being very much in the design element for it instead of just hammering it out like really fast, like a lot of TV was doing. And yet they still did it, all those setups, all those crazy things and all that cinematic stuff on the same hectic TV schedule. And that's where that golden age came from, because they learned this methodology of how to do it just like the movies, but to do it just as fast as they used to do on TV. And that's really kind of incredible.
I could not have said it better. I think most of that is due to a lot of 90s movies and independent films kind of going for a lot of, you know, overexposed lighting, handheld, and taking Tarantino type scripts and organizing their chaotic story and having a lot of wonderful dialogue to give actors to bite into. And so by this time, you know, we got I think it helped that a lot of these crew had worked as interns on other shows and done a lot of their own side projects, because it definitely goes for kind of a bigger docudrama look. And you know, we've already had other shows like 24 and what's the other one that I mean, for lack of a better comparison, we even have Monk, just shows that are just comfortable just having just very quiet moments. And then just kind of you're literally feeling the characters actually breathe in the room, so to speak. But yeah, the camera work is definitely impressive, because they're definitely taking shots that it's not just that they're taking shots that no one else could have thought of. It's that they're just comfortable going there. They're willing to get, they're not just doing the, you know, coverage of this and that. They literally are just, you can tell, have storyboarded every kind of thing that, you know, just hits their mind instead of just relying on just the steady cam or the shoulder mounts. And like you say, just the Scorsese Goodfellas restaurant shots where he's just, and yeah, the sound is rolling and you are literally doing a, nowadays too much network TV shows will just have a rotating shot, and half the time it just feels like an afterthought. It's like, why did you have that rotating shot? That didn't I didn't see anything about the room that I need to see. And here is like, you got to see everything, because, you know, you're seeing characters look over their shoulder, and, you know, there's a lot of other body language that's going to be telling later on. And I think it helped that Clark Johnson really got him off to a start, because not only is this the first mature audience show for FX, and which changes the whole cable TV game as a whole, but have you read the book Men in Difficult Times?
No,
I have it's not. A great book talking about just edgy programming, you know, and then it goes on to post Breaking Bad world. And I guarantee you, Breaking Bad with the money train and all that would not exist And I've had so much trouble getting fans into this show because they, at the end of the day, just think it's another cop show. I'm like, well, you like Sopranos, all this, why wouldn't you check this out? I don't know, man, it's not selling me. And I'm like, and those who have seen it have been impressed, but others just, for whatever reason, they just think, they just see the badge and they think, oh, it's just another watch someone get interrogated and arrested. It's like, it's so, such a different kind of twisted earthquake of a show. And Clark Johnson, you know, who had worked on Homicide and plenty of the other shows, and he had just gotten done with The Wire, which is premiering literally a week before this show airs. And he had a phrase called shoot the dog, which happened when he saw that there was a dog in the shot and he wanted to instruct his cinematographers, follow that stray dog around, which was just their instruction to, again, just get a lot of in the moment kind of coverage. And as they're tracking all the actors running through a LA street that they secured, I'm like, that's cool. That's very inspirational, even as a storyteller, to hear that phrase, you know, because you just like cover it. Follow this, follow that, get every kind of angle that just comes to mind instead of just, I think we got it.
Well, and the TV cameras that they were using at the time, when they were, especially when they started moving in towards like the high definition cameras that they were shooting, it allotted them the ability to shoot multiple angles and they could shoot different levels of footage. And they did have some stuff where they shot like less than great cameras out to get this coverage, but what it ended up affording them is all of these different angles and all these different views of things that they could be jumping around in, and you never really get a sense of security because you just see all of these different angles and all of this different stuff, the way that they're jumping around. And
exactly
the footage being a little bit more grainy whenever that's being shot with these kinds of cameras when they're out in LA doing the stuff that they're actually doing with the street they have closed down for that small amount of time. Like, they just literally are just shooting everything and anything in that alley to bring this world together. And then they end up doing the stuff that they need to do, like with their actors running through and all this stuff. But they have all of these other things that they can just kind of build this world. And so when you just start to see the world that these guys are in, and then you realize that that's real life, and then the fact that they're shooting it with stuff that feels like just right on the line of between professional camcorder for TV and like consumer grade, like high end consumer grade camera. Like, they're shooting with a shitload of those. So that type of look makes it feel like the kind of DV footage or DV cam footage you would have seen in this era when someone was using like their own little personal mini cam or whatever it is. But it's just slightly better picture quality because it's just right up above that. But it feels very much like any gang members just shooting what these cops are doing to blackmail them later, you know, like when you're seeing these things, and it adds to that level of realism.
Yeah, I would look at what they were shooting as like, it's almost what you would get on a Sony camcorder of any era. But yeah, it's like slightly above because they clearly planned for it. It's like they planned that look. They planned how to shoot it efficiently and still make it, you know, where the viewer can actually see what's going on instead of just, you know, overexposed. What's happening?
Yeah, it's like they shot with, and I don't know what the cameras actually were, but it feels like they shot with like the smallest camera that Panasonic. Whatever smallest camera that existed in that era that was still the highest resolution that they could get for their broadcaster that would meet their standards for broadcast. And maybe it just has a fixed lens that's like, you know, just one thing, or maybe they're using just a classic video camera lens, so they're not that worried about it, but it's just like just the smallest that they can get so they can move around and just run around a bit. So like, that's why I said it feels like it's those kinds of cameras that are just above what a consumer would pay or a high-end consumer camera would be.
I'm sure you're on the money. It had to be, because I mean, when this was first going around, you know what the problem was, this almost didn't get aired because you know, when the then president of FX, you know, was promoting this, he was getting a bunch of people to sponsor it. And this is back before everyone seemed to like to put across, oh, I have standards. It's like they didn't want to sponsor it because it dealt with police corruption. It wasn't that it was graphic. It was more that it's like, oh, that material, you know, unless it's a pay channel, in which case they don't need it. We're not going to get behind it. And so then the president was like, okay, well, if you want, want us to sponsor you. I need everyone in the room to say yes to this. And here's the irony. They all thought the pilot was really good and everything. So it's just the whole standards, the morals behind it is like, well, it's not that kind of show, but at least it's in on the joke that we're following around all these awful human beings and capturing them in the moment. So they really did luck out because, you know, now there aren't really any standards in the material that's portrayed. I mean, we got shows like Ray Donovan and, you know, I last covered Reprisal on here with you. So I think more or less it just was in the right time at the right place, along with the fact that they were able to get this kind of look and plan this kind of vision without getting any interference. And I don't think they ever had any administrator or executive come to set and say, you can't do that. It's just too much. Because
we'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pox disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hey, I heard you like movies.
I heard you like to hustle.
I heard you like podcasts.
Well, guess what?
There's a podcast for you out there called The Home Video Hustle.
Damn right.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag. What does that mean? Every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I put a bunch of movies in a bag, and PJ picks one out at random. And then we just watch it, and we talk about it for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever we feel like doing, wherever the conversation leads us.
But do we actually talk about the movie?
Most of the time.
Ah.
Tangents galore.
Yes.
So believe me, we may be a movie podcast, but it's not always about movies. We might talk about video games.
Mm-hmm. Music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the big one, music. Sometimes we might get a little bit of politicalness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes we may just, oh, you know what we like to do? We like to tell stories, PJ.
Ah, yes.
I am the master storyteller
yes.
of the podcast realm. Undefeated. So if you like to hear about movies, video games, whatever foolishness comes to our mind, the most random stuff you can think of, check out the Home Video Hustle. You can find us on the Stitchers.
Yes.
The Google Play.
Yes.
Apple Podcasts.
What else?
Podbean.
What else?
Podcast Addict.
Goddamn.
All that. Ain't no reason you can't get your hustle on. We everywhere. Worldwide, baby.
Hustle, mother. Hustle.
Hey, we can't cuss in the promo, PJ.
Ah.
We gotta be family friendly. There may be podcasts out there that don't want his hair to say
ah.
Yeah. All that good fun stuff.
Well, you.
Yeah. don't run the listeners away, PJ.
Ah, I'm sorry.
But this is going kind of long.
Yes.
So we'll end this and say, hey, check out the Home Video Hustle every Friday on all the various podcast outlets. Peace.
Peace.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And while Witch didn't make it to the top of the world, he did make the Gangs of Hollywood podcast. So join the gang and enjoy a movie review podcast about movie gangs, gangsters, mobsters, and the mayhem they cause. You can find GOH Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At GOHpod, at www.gohpod.com, as well as your favorite podcast listening app. And remember, say hello to your little friend for me.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies. Break down, break down,
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was
How
be a
did
rough
you watch
movie.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 out. Bana 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 out.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With the one last plot holes are gratuitous movies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
We now continue with our program.
They also had plenty of freedom. They could have had way more foul language, but they just pretty much just went with just off-color, you know, slang, you know, slurs and just shit all the time. So, but that was just, I thought, already good enough. Is like, it really wouldn't make that big of a difference, really.
No, I feel like they pushed things just far enough to open the door to where other shows could be like, well, you allowed this in the Shield. You know,
right,
you allowed that in this Shield. This got past standards and practices, and this did. And then they could push another envelope in another direction. Like, what's the difference between me saying this and then this person saying that in the show? What's the difference? You know?
Right, and, absolutely.
And that's just kind of how this works. We get standards and practices beat back by inches, is how it ends up being. You just do little things at a little bit of a time. And I feel like all content creators at all times know that they need to continue to keep pushing back against, just ever so gently, just pushing back against the tide of what is supposed to be morally and socially acceptable, and just making people like look at themselves in a way that maybe they don't want to, just a little bit more. You know, whenever you're making content, you just got to push back just a little bit more and not let people say, hey, you really shouldn't be telling this story. Just so the rest of the world can be just a little bit more uncomfortable, because that's what storytelling is for. That's what creating content and entertainment really should be, is to make people re-examine their world just a little bit. Because if you're not telling them, if you're not telling them a story that has somewhat of a moral to it, even if it's a fucked up one that you probably shouldn't be telling, but if you don't have at least somewhat of a moral to it, you shouldn't really be telling a story. Every story needs to teach someone something about themselves by the time they're done hearing it. That's just how they were created. That's why the shamans used to gather us all around the fire and talk to us.
There you go.
It was so that they could say, hey, don't mess with that snake out there. It's going to kill you, to keep people from going out and messing with the snake or whatever.
Ironically, there is, I think, at one point, even a snake on their van. So these guys are kind of just self-aware snakes, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's like... but no, that's a good point too. There is a lot of material too, where we're seeing a lot of these, anti, or pro, you know, cancel culture guys kind of look in the mirror even and just realize, oh, wow, that thing I'm against, that's because I am that scumbag, you know, so I'm not going to say anything bad about this because I don't want to be spooked. I don't want to be discovered that I am just not much different from one of these awful people being depicted on screen. It's kind of funny. I've never even heard any actual police talk about this show. It's like, I don't know if they discovered someone that scummy in the SIS program or vice squads, or if they just felt like they didn't have anything positive to add to it and they didn't want to have their words taken out of context, even though there's no taking it out of context. I don't know.
I feel like most cops would watch The Shield like most drug dealers watch like Scarface. Where like it's like a fantasy, like
that's
blow
what
off
they
steam.
Want to do.
Yeah, like they wish they could just be this ruthless kind of thing. Like I feel like that's what it would be. But then again, my opinion of cops is already well known, so obviously I'll just stop with that because I'm trying to be diplomatic on your show.
All cops are dummies. Fuck them.
That's your show. You can say that on your show.
I know, that's fine, but that's a good point. That they're definitely. There are some people who get nervous about certain movies being accepted a certain way. Is like, there's still going to be people who watch, The Terminator or Godfather just for the violence. Just, they don't give a fuck about anything that's going on in the whole thing. They're just like, yeah, I just forward to the gory scenes. It's like, Jesus.
I mean, that's what I do for a lot of movies. I just jump right to the good stuff. I'll admit it.
Yeah, there's
I still love the storytelling behind it, but when you've seen it 100 fucking times, sometimes you just want to watch that one head explosion that's awesome.
Well, that's fine too. But it seems like these guys were just like so, like just distorted from reality. It's like that's the only reason they watched any kind of TV. I kind of at least want to just some fun build up before I see, you know, I'm done with the teasing and I see all the goodies, the gratuitous shit. So I don't know. It's interesting though. Yeah, did you know that this show had a rivalry with The Wire for a while?
No, I did not know that because I came to both of them relatively late, so I had no clue.
It was kind of funny, especially because they have a lot of the same crew. But it's interesting how Clark Johnson just kind of dissolved that when he heard that, and he's like, "Yeah, see." And this has even been an argument refuted on various other TV related forums, is like on The Wire, basically nobody's going to snitch at all. And everybody's just going to just admit to doing the most pettiest of the pettiest stuff. Like, sure, I killed that guy. Can I get a cheeseburger? And I'll tell you more. And here on The Shield is like, everybody's just afraid of Vic just beating them over the head because he's turned off the camera. And it does it in a way without being cartoonish. I know some people found that they couldn't take the show seriously. And I feel like it does a good job of making the implausibility just enough to buy into, especially when you got all these other political figures and bureaucrats questioning their own worth, if that makes sense. It's like you're seeing all these people pretty much abusing each other's power, and pretty much the only way anyone leaves the station or resigns is if someone gets dirt on the other or gets caught. And there's several times where Vic becomes a fugitive in many ways because he's just... But they don't do the typical, you know, I need your badge, all that shit. It's just kind of more just like, Vic didn't show up today. Well, that can't be good. He must be out on the side of a highway, you know. And there's plenty of other... How they film car chases on this, I think, is very legit good, because it doesn't do it like movie style, even though there's already plenty of other movie style takes on this European that you'd see in like a European movie. How they do a car chase is... Sometimes they do kind of just various like first person foot shots, and then they switch to kind of just the aftermath. That there's great use of Foley's and other quick cuts to just kind of just give you a bigger picture instead of just having to draw a bunch of different scenes out that may or may not serve a bigger purpose. But all this really does add up to just an explosive milkshake, for lack of a better description. It's just like you're getting all this chaos fed to you. But it's all very well planned out instead of feeling, I mean, as close as I can think, I've already mentioned Ray Donovan. I think Homeland's another example of a show which makes great use of psychological elements at the end of the day. Because you're seeing all these people pretty much question these institutes that are supposed to stand for something greater. And of course, everybody's compromised by various agendas and just a shitstorm of just incoherentness.
Well, that's the problem with everything that people build, is that it's built by people and we're awful.
Well, we're awful, but we're also, once everything is built up to a certain level, you pretty much reign in a bunch of lies, and then you just have to rely on those lies to have any sort of credibility, because you don't even know what you stand for anymore after a while when you've been just breathing lies. It's just like all the coke that the dealers are, you know, snuffing in, or the money that the cops are stealing at the crime scene when no one's looking. It's like they're so used to doing it, it's second nature, and that's all they know how to do. I see this show compared to plenty of other stuff like Serpico and Training Day. It's got those influences, but nowadays when I look at a crooked cop movie or show, I can tell which one they took from the most. If it's from The Shield, then that means we're seeing, you know, videotape and just other just creative methods that a cop is disposing of, as opposed to, you know, get a famous actor to play, you know, a despicable cop or anti-bad cop buster, you know. But there's definitely some LeMay influence here, though, especially in some of the interrogation scenes where people have to basically express their worth, especially when Vic finally gets caught at the end. It's a very interesting display of, you know, that you would never see in a Scorsese movie, for instance, where someone is just pretty much just laying it out on the table. Shameful, yet shameless at the same time. It's just like, yeah, you caught me. But
the fact of the matter that he manipulates ICE into making a deal where he can just basically tell them everything he's ever done wrong and never be charged for it, like the way that he tricks them and confesses everything and does this huge testimony, and then the punishment that happens to him, that is a fate actually worse than death than for him. He is now just going to be an analyst. He's just going to sit there, and he will never be allowed out in the field to do violence again. Mackey is going to be tormented for the rest of whatever career he has, and they're going to keep him there and keep punishing him.
Absolutely. To just have this man just pretty much have the brakes be put on him. You know, he's already used to putting the brakes on everybody else, and to have him just literally just be in this purgatory. It's like, I'm not in hell, which is prison. I've already sent all my other friends there. I'm not death, like what happened to Shane. I'm in the middle here, and I can't do anything, pretty much. I just have to come to the office and hide my annoyed, you know, perceptions of this all.
Yeah, the fact that they took away the only thing that made it good for being a cop for him, that he can't get any of the action and the violence that he so desperately craves, is a very fitting punishment. And I also think it's very funny that he ended up working for ICE, because let's look at the state of what ICE is like now in our country, and it really is a modern day fucking Gestapo. So it's perfect that Mackey would be working for them. He's probably flourishing right now under Trump.
There you go. If he hasn't blown his brains out or escaped and become a, you know, drug lord. But he's too neat for that. So, yeah, he's probably with ICE, and now he's just willingly, he's probably at some riot, you know.
Oh, no, he's probably running a fucking internment camp. That's how fucking evil Mackey is.
Oh, there you go. And he to him, it's all just fun and games. It's as close as he got to doing all the unethical bullshit he did before. Mike Chiklis, who, again, did not take his agent's advice. You know, he'd already done a stupid sitcom called Daddy-O, and he had done, you know, voiceovers for Family Guy, but he's pretty much still known as just the guy from the commish. And it's so funny, Clark Johnson, the director of the pilot and various other episodes, did not want to see his audition tape at all. He's like, is that motherfucker from the... Yeah, no, I'm not seeing his audition. And everybody else looked at it, and so then he finally, you know, just succumbed to it and said, oh my God, I had no idea. You know, he lost weight, he shaved his head. He totally went against the grain and decided, I want this kind of role. I've already done good cop, now I'm going to do bad cop. And Chiklis said, you know, in many interviews, he could tell they were onto something when he saw the show, you know, at various sports bars, and he saw half the audience divided, much like with you see with Outlaws. Some of the crew was clearly, you know, gangsterish, saying that rat got it in the opening, and the others were like, oh my God, I hope this bastard gets caught eventually. Yeah, so he knew this show already had success written in its blood. And it's like, yeah, okay. So we are totally going to play on everyone's emotions while having it pay off. See who's going to get caught, and well, questioning everyone else's morals under the surface. Yeah, the ones who are assholes who want to see him secretly get away, they're totally scum of the earth. But at the same time, someone like me or you kind of wants to see all this mayhem play out in a way, and just see it, just because the third person perspective is just so well portrayed. It is so it's a great thrill ride, and at the same time, it's not just a thrill ride. You're seeing just so many different characters just depict various, basically they all symbolize a different emotion. Like Claudette is basically just the gentle giant. Danny is basically the go and get it, you know, not going to wait around attitude. And, you know, Vic is definitely the we're evil, but we're not as bad as all these other people who, in my opinion, are worse than me. You know, he's just the contrarian, so to speak. And even though he gets outed as a contrarian near the end, you know, it's still interesting seeing Shane kind of dare him to break his own whatever little principles he has. But yeah, I feel like we've all pretty much stretched this. Don't get me wrong, there's plenty of other themes to talk about, but I feel like we pretty much just summarized as a whole why the show has stood the test of time. I run the Facebook group on it, and it's interesting how many people I've had to kick out who are basically Nazis and how many have really found the show very thrilling.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of hard to watch it now with modern eyes, like I said, because they very much are a prototype of the type of person that neo-Nazis would be really into, because that's literally what they're doing. They're using their power to further disenfranchise and beat down minorities. So that's, I could totally see why they would be into it. But the thing is that we're not watching the good guys when we're watching those dudes in the
show.
We're
not watching the good guys, but I also feel like it never really glamorizes them.
No, not at all. Like, it's what I'm basically getting at here is, if you are idolizing the people on Mackie's team, and if you are idolizing Tyler Durden, and if you are idolizing
Taxi Driver, yeah.
Yeah, the guy from Taxi Driver, you're missing the point of the story.
And I'm sure Sean Ryan knew he was going to run into that to begin with, and so he had to just wisely just kind of, much like anyone making a comedy show, is like, the right people get it. And it helped that, I think it did help that it was on late at night. So basically, people who were looking for something kind of like Oz or, trying to think of another edgy show, 6 Feet Under, or just some other just kind of just unusual Unravel filled show, that they were going to dig it and they were going to understand it. They realized it wasn't going to be a Die Hard type movie, or, you know, with awful shitty people being heroes, because there really weren't even heroes. There was plenty of other people who at one point or another had basically been sleeping with the devil. I mean, as we see with Danny, you know, she would have never slept with Vic. She just kind of thought, she knew he was an asshole, but she saw the humor in him at first. And then it's just so wild how he wants the kid, and she's like, oh, I'm gonna cut off every tie, and I'm going to hang out with Dutch, because I know you really hate Dutch. And so it's very interesting how they were able to take that and also just look at all these perspectives, all these various people, without using them as plot device. I mean, there's some sexist characters. Vic is definitely a sexist. Women to him are just, who can he spoon or, you know, get his dick sucked from. But it's never, we, the viewer, never have to sympathize with that, unless you're an actual sexist watching the show. He's like, yeah, yeah, I'm an incel, I love the show. But no, it handles it well. And like you say, I think Vic getting his comeuppance, I think, does help out. Because I think eventually down the road, I'm sure Acevedo's, it's also trying to be very telling of just real life. Evil never really dies away unless it, you know, because even if the person is killed, there's people who follow that guy around, or who I have idolized him and try and, you know, do a Manson kind of thing. It's like, I'm going to spread the hate. But, you know, unlike Sopranos and all these other shows, a lot of people complain about the ending. I really do feel like the ending to me just really paid off for it. Cause I mean, just seeing all this shit just explode on screen and barely a moment to breathe after watching every episode, I knew that the viewer, that everyone had it pretty planned out. I wouldn't mind a movie version, but like you say, it would just be too... you would pretty much still have the same thing. You would pretty much still have Vic ends up in prison after doing some mischief. And like you say, there'd just be so many neo-Nazis who would probably praise it nowadays to where it'd just be like, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, if you want a movie version, just watch Training Day. It has almost some of the same elements and it's filmed very similarly. So it works to get you that fix if you want to watch a movie version and going through all seven seasons.
There you go. Watch that movie for the billionth time. Watch Serpico. Watch any other.
There's also a like early 20-aughts movie made by Wayne Kramer called Running Scared that you could check out that has a very similar feeling show.
That's true. There's that. There's Narc. Hell, fucking watch every other Bruce Willis movie that's come out lately. It's got a bunch of crooked cop movies. Den of Thieves. Den of Thieves, I think, is an interesting if the strike team was violating less rules, where you got douchebag Gerard Butler going around, going after these semi-serial killer Latin robbery gangs.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. That actually does have a lot of the same elements. That all is mixed a little bit more, too, with the modern like, sort of trying to be an urban film.
An urban version of Heat.
Heat or a more urban version of Heat, because they're trying to focus in on like a more poor neighborhood that the thieves are operating out on than, say, the guys that are the pro bank robbers in Heat. You know, it's like a street level. That's what I'm looking for. Like a street level version of Heat is what that Den of Thieves is.
It's definitely more street level. It definitely never comes off as, you know, here's the upper class LA neighborhood, you know, hey, what? And you're going to go to the casino next day with all this money that you've stolen, you know?
Right. It's guys just trying to feed their fucking family by robbing the shit out of places.
Right. And they're career criminals. They're good at doing that. They have all this other stuff in advance. And Styx Media, I noticed, has kind of just been making this kind of a habit for them, because, you know, they and Open Road Films will always release movies kind of similar to that, like, you know, Faster, 999, Black and White, which deals with, you know, police cams, and even 21 Bridges, which was Chadwick Boseman's final movie, dealt with a lot of stuff of, you know, cops versus good and bad cops, as well as having to ally with other guys who just really blur the line.
Yeah, well, there's always a market for that. There's always somebody that's going to see a film like that and just click rent now, you know, for $2.99, or even if it does get a chance to be back in theaters, if that happens again, you know.
Absolutely.
That'd be the like the $5 Tuesday movie. You're like, fuck yeah, that looks interesting. I'll check it out. Like that's your bread and butter for that kind of market.
It really is. Nowadays, they might want to sneak it by just having it be just kind of a spy or assassin movie. That's just the best anti-hero to do outside of all the superhero stuff. But yeah, if someone actually does want to do a mature takedown, kind of like The Hate U Give, and just talk about recent horrific events, you're really going to have to really think it out instead of just feeling like you're preaching to the choir or just making the issue worse, because now you're not really saying anything that hasn't already been said about how America really sucks right now, you know? So,
and no one wants to hear it because we're all just fucking depressed anyway.
We're depressed, and we just now we just want to find something that can even be a little sneakier, which can even just comment on all the other stuff. It's like, wow, when you peel it that way,
I've never
seen like that before.
You got to do sort of like what they had to do in the Hays Code days, where you just make it implied just enough so a person that isn't really understanding some of that more sly reference style will understand that you're talking about premarital sex and be offended. Like, if they're not smart enough to get that that's what you're talking about in your joke and what you're making references to, then you've done okay.
Like, exactly.
Or if you're going to tell a story and you want to try and, you know, basically point out a social issue that you want to bring attention to and sort of psyop it in there and sway somebody's mind with it, you basically portray it in such a way so that the person doesn't get that you are trying to send them a message at the same time that they're watching a cop blow off somebody's head. Instead of just the violence of it, like the message behind it and the things that happen to it, if you can sideload that and sneak it into them, then you are doing your job as a writer.
this, yeah, I could not have said it better yourself because you are one of a kind. So thank you so much for putting it that way. Come to think of it, have you seen the movie War on Everyone?
No, I have not.
Because that's kind of Training Day meets Falling Down. That's definitely the kind of movie where it has so many Easter eggs like what you described, where you have to be absolutely just out of it to just not get any of it. But it does a lot of sneaking around, too, before you get the whole, you know, the joke, so to speak. It's not kind of like Paul Verhoeven, where because you got a German guy working in an American industry, there's still going to be some stuff that goes over everyone's head to where they're like, wait, that's also a satire? Oh, I thought it was just a stupid action sci-fi movie. That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Verhoeven has done very well is make a very American film that really puts a middle finger up to the American way of thinking in the time frame that it was released in with Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers, but even going back to Flesh and Blood and you know, RoboCop. And
oh yeah, RoboCop was, yeah, true
anti-commercialism.
Yeah, but I think the way that he got one over on everybody so much so that no one realized it was more Starship Troopers than any of the other ones. I think people got it with RoboCop, but like with Starship Troopers, I think it went way over everybody's head.
Well, and he was just so damaged from Showgirls, which is also a satire. I don't think it's a great one, but it's definitely, it serves its point, you know, as being a silly, you know, I think it's definitely realistic, even though it's overacted. So
it's a beautiful landing at the exact wrong airport.
Yes, that's the best way of putting it. Where basically everybody is basically just, they know what they want to say, they just don't say it necessarily the best way.
Right. Well, we're real off topic. We got to rein it back in now.
I was actually going to end it there, but
that worked.
I'm going to let you plug yourself. No pun intended.
I mean, usually you buy me a drink first, but okay.
Oh.
Yeah. If you are interested in listening to me babble on more uncontrollably than I have on this segment,
it was great.
legionpodcast.com/cinema-psyops. That's the main landing and launching page. Should have the RSS feed there as well. If you search cinema and then a space in Apple Podcasts, we usually come up about the third or fourth entry of Cinema Psyops. If you just Google the word Cinema Psyops, we are all over the freaking internet. There's 268 consecutively released episodes over the last almost, like, well, now 6 years and counting of the show. So it's out there. It's easy to find. Just either Google Cinema Psyops or do the search in Apple Podcasts. Or, like I said, legionpodcast.com/cinema-psyops.
Cinema Psyops. Kadoosh. So, thank you for wiping the floor with this, and thank you ever so much. It's been a while since we talked on one episode together, so awesome.
Yeah, this was a shitload of fun, and now I feel like I need to rewatch The Shield. I think it's finally time.
Oh, jeez. Well, prepare for headache-inducing brilliance.
yeah, it's going to hurt, but it's going to hurt so good.
Oh, baby. So... Great. Now I got to get on to another interview. Jump on this and then jump onto the Zoom. It's exhausting, but it's fun. Thank you ever so much, brother.
I appreciate it, man. You have a good night. I hope this turns out to your liking.
Oh, it exceeded expectations.
Awesome. I'm glad.
I embrace the insanity. So awesome. Thank you, sir. Yep. And keep out of trouble with all the Nazis in this shithole country. So
I'm doing my best. So
I have to brace impact every day as security. So it's a chore.
Well, I'm sure the people you are keeping safe are grateful for your sacrifice you're making for them.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.